David Lear. I just told him he doesn't need any introduction, but I'm supposed to say something. Vice President, Advanced Engineering, NAB's Technology Department, a favorite here at the clinic, don't you all agree? So, you can read about David in the booklet, but we welcome David Lear. Thank you.
Okay, hello everybody. Thanks for having me back. It's one of my favorite trips of the year. And I, you know, since before COVID, I used to travel a lot, but this was actually my first post-COVID trip back in 2021. So you all are lucky. Luckier Wisconsin broadcasters, because not every state has a meeting or an organization like this. So it's really great to be here. So I'm going to be talking about a lot of receiver stuff. And metadata is something, actually, metadata was the subject of my presentation in 2021, and but I've got to keep talking about it because broadcasters don't seem to, you know, at least many broadcasters don't seem to be getting the message, and hopefully the information I'm sharing with you today will help to impress upon you the importance of using metadata. So, you know, what's the big deal, right? Why do we keep talking about this? Well, metadata is here, and it's something that everybody should be using. Every broadcaster should be adding it to their signals. I'm talking to radio broadcasters here mostly, obviously. Why is it so important? Well, consumers expect it because competing services use it, use it really well too, like, and use it in every case. You know, whenever you do a podcast or a pure play streaming service, they've always got metadata on everything that you listen to. And consumers expect it. They've come to expect it. Car manufacturers support it. And mostly I mentioned car manufacturers, and you're gonna see most of the receiver shots here are from auto receivers because so much, you know, listening is done in cars. It's very hard to buy a non-auto radio these days. I guess Mike was showing us pictures of the CC Crane radio. And, you know, there's one source for non-auto radios. But I was somewhere last week and somebody was talking about how you go to Best Buy and you do not see a tabletop radio for sale. So it's important to look at what's happening in the cars. Broadcasters are now starting to monetize metadata. One of the best examples of that is a company called Q Interactive. It's a service provider who is helping broadcasters monetize their metadata. And I am seeing that when I listen to the radio in Washington, D.C., which is where I'm based, I am seeing, these pictures here that I'm showing are from the radio that's in my Hyundai Ioniq 5, which is an electric car that I bought about a year ago. It's a great platform for me to have in my car because it's got hybrid radio. So it really gives me an opportunity to see what really good metadata can look like. On my hybrid radio, I'll see ads with metadata on them. So that's broadcasters making money with it. I'm getting ahead of myself. Back in 2017, so that was like, what, 6 years ago, is really when we first started talking about metadata in earnest. We hired the Jacobs Media Company to do some surveys, and in just a minute, I'm gonna show you the results of a market survey I did yesterday here in Madison, where I scanned through the band, and I looked at all the stations, and you'll see my spreadsheet, and to see how much metadata is being used here in Madison. Here is an example. The thing that really drives this whole revolution is the dashboard displays, the modern dashboard displays that automakers are now using. And I just thought this was a pretty interesting example of how metadata reaches the listener. Because here, what I'm showing here is the receiver display when I'm listening to a podcast. It's the Daily, which is a New York Times podcast, comes out every day. And you can see that's 3:35. I was in my car. I was listening to that podcast, and then I realized, oh, that's also being broadcast on 88.5. So I just thought it was pretty interesting to see how, you know, they're both making good use of that metadata. And from a listener's perspective, that's got to be nice. Is, you know, whether you're looking at it, listening to it on the radio, or whether you're listening to the podcast, you're getting you're having that good experience of, you know, the radio looking as good as it sounds, as we say. So that's a current pretty state of the art display in my Hyundai. But they you know, these car makers just don't stop. They keep going and going. And here are some examples of even bigger displays and displays for the passengers. This was a car I saw at the LA Auto Show last year. And so this is something that you can buy now. This is not a prototype or a future vehicle. Here's a photo that was just released last week by Audi showing the display that's going to be in the Q6 e-tron, which is going to come out next year. We had announcements from Xperi at IBC this year. Hopefully all the radio broadcasters in the room are familiar with DTS AutoStage. That's the hybrid radio platform that Mercedes and Hyundai Group vehicles are using. And it's a great service. It produces a great station list, makes radio look great. They announced at IBC that now they're rolling out a video service. Okay, so this is separate from the audio service. This is not going to start appearing on the vehicles that already have AutoStage. But it's a new product. They announced it in BMW vehicles. So pretty soon you'll be able to watch your favorite football game while you're driving down the road, it looks like. Actually, I think the idea here is that this is the kind of thing where you can't use video, at least in the U.S. I don't think you'd be allowed to watch the video while you were driving. But while you're parked at the charging station, where you have to sit for 30 minutes to get your car charged, this is an application that they have in mind, I think. And here are just some screenshots of that. Here's the guide, you know, the different services that are being supported by this AutoStage video product. And, you know, it's pretty crazy. It's not going to stop there either. I guess Mercedes was just talking about they have a level 3 autonomous vehicle now, it's getting pretty close to the point where a car can drive itself. And of course, once that happens, then those displays will be available for everybody in the vehicle and not just the passengers. So one of the things that we have done over the last couple of years is go into markets and listen to the band and create a report card, if you will, of how the radio stations in that market are doing with respect to metadata. So yesterday I arrived and I rented a car, and luckily for me, they gave me this really nice BMW. I wasn't expecting that. And I sat out here, sitting out here right now, in fact, still. I sat out there and I did the survey, and then I put together the results. Here's an example. Here's a photo of the inside of the vehicle. This is some sort of hybrid vehicle, I guess. But coming from the rental car facility, the battery was totally discharged, so it's all gas. I'm not getting any benefit from the hybrid capability of this vehicle. But there you see the infotainment display. Honestly, I'm not that crazy about it, because as you can see there, the largest part of the screen there is taken up by this station list. And best as I can tell, that's always there. So the now playing screen is limited to that smaller area there on the left. And I think I showed the Hyundai screen again. I think Hyundai did a much better job of, they basically flipped this. They minimized the station list, and then they maximized the area in the screen for the now playing information, which I think is a better arrangement. Now here's an example of, and there I've got the arrow there just to highlight that station list portion of the infotainment display. And what I'm showing you here on top, that's about as much metadata as you can get into this receiver. So You can see this is an HD radio station. You see there's a little logo next to the station name on the list. There's some album art. There's song title and artist. This is about it for this radio. Really good job. Looks great. Down here, this is the least amount of information that you... This broadcaster doesn't appear to be sending any metadata. You'll notice there's nothing in the station list to help describe the station other than the frequency. And down there where it says you are listening to, what I figured out after a while is that's something the BMW infotainment system adds. So if there's no metadata, it writes that you are listening to, and then it puts this frequency, which it knows, obviously, because you've tuned to that frequency. And you can see there's nothing there. There's no logo. There's no artist image. So this is what we're trying to avoid. This is when a listener goes to radio and they want to listen to something on the radio and they see this sort of thing, they must think, where's all the data? Where are all the logos? If they've just come over from Sirius XM or from one of their maybe internet-provided services like a podcast service. So here's my spreadsheet. And I've rated each station after looking at it. I did it for both RDS and HD radio because it's possible in the receiver to disable the HD feature. So then you're able to see what's coming over on RDS. And I hope you all know what I mean when I talk about RDS, right? RDS is radio data system. It's a FM data subcarrier that allows analog FM stations to transmit metadata. So it's not that good. I've highlighted here what I see on the station list as I scan through the dial. Ideally, if I were to put a auto stage station list up here, what you would see for every station is a logo, a description, call sign, maybe a slogan for every single station as you scan through the band. And that's one of the beautiful things about the hybrid radio system that Xperi has deployed is that it provides a great station list. When you look at this station list, you're really scratching your head. What in the world are we looking at here? And imagine a listener seeing that station list and not knowing what to make of it at all. And I'll tell you my explanation for how this station list looks, and that is that the receiver is looking for the program service or PS field that's being broadcast in the RDS signal. And many broadcasters put song title and artist information in that PS field and scroll it because older radios only had that PS field. So the only way to get song title and artist information to those older radios is to do this scrolling PS feature. But I think broadcasters need to think about whether they want to do that, given that modern receivers are using the PS information to generate station lists. And I saw this in a GM car I looked at when I was in Detroit earlier this year. So it's really, the broadcasters have to decide, do they want to support the old radios with the scrolling PS, or do they want to support the new radios, which expect that the PS field is being used as intended, and the intended use of the PS field is a static 8-character string. And you see a bunch of those here. You see JAMZ. I think that's probably a correct use of PS because it's static on 94.1. A bunch of these were okay. La Movida, that's probably the slogan. That's the name that station is known by, I imagine. So this is one of the issues that we're facing in these vehicles. Sorry. Now the HD radio signals are in much better shape. And it's not surprising really, is it? Because if somebody's invested in the HD radio technology, which provides, you know, the ability to send logos and images and, you know, rich metadata, they're going to be inclined to use it. And these numbers would bear, you know, what we're seeing here, a lot of green, would bear that out. And similarly, the station list entry, and, you know, this was BMW's decision, I guess, was this is how we're going to create our station list for HD radio signals. And it works. I mean, you look at that station list, and you see something that makes sense. It's complete. You know, so that's done nicely. Well, here are the results of the survey that I took. I decided that for RDS, you know, about half of the stations are doing something wrong. And in this case, because of the receiver I'm looking at, I consider scrolling PS to be doing something wrong because of how it shows up in the station list. Now, somebody else might say, yeah, okay, but that's the price I pay for supporting those older receivers. But, you know, a very small percentage of the broadcasters that I visited in this radio yesterday were doing what I would consider a good job. Again, HD radio, much improved. So, just for comparison, these are some past surveys that we did. The top two were done in 2017. These are two that I've done this year. 6 years later, and you know, they're not much different. It doesn't look like people are either not getting our message or just not listening to it. And we're not the only ones saying this either, by the way. So it looks like there's room for improvement. And that's really my goal today, is to help broadcasters who didn't fall into the green or the, you know, the top categories there in our survey, to motivate you to think about doing that, you know, doing what it takes. So I'm gonna, that's kind of by way of my introduction. I'm gonna just say a brief word about NAB. I was looking through my old presentations and I'm telling you all the same thing year after year, so I'm hoping most of you were here before and saw what I talked about. I'm gonna talk a little bit about implementing metadata. And then I'm going to just, at the last couple minutes, I want to spend some time talking about what we're doing at NAB with respect to technology. So you're all hopefully familiar with our trade association. We're the largest trade association for over-the-air radio and TV broadcasters. We have our shows each year. I'm happy to say we've had, you know, two NAB shows now since the pandemic, which is very important for our organization because about 70% of our revenue each year comes from our annual trade show in April. So it's good that that's back on track. IBC just happened, and I think IBC had a pretty good experience. So that bodes well for our show in next April, I think. Before then, of course, we have the NAB Show New York, which is just a couple weeks. Number of radio-focused things happening there. Maybe some of you went to the radio show in the past. Of course, the radio show went away. But we've started to incorporate elements of the radio show into our New York event. You know, it's a couple weeks away. I hope some of you can join us in New York. So let me start talking about implementing metadata. It's important for all stations and all formats. I don't know, some people might think, well, I'm an AM broadcaster, and AM doesn't really support metadata, but of course it does, right? Because most AM broadcasters stream their signal. So the streaming audio version of your signal certainly supports metadata, and many AM broadcasters put their signal on HD multicast channels, and I saw a bunch of that here in Madison yesterday when I was doing my survey. So these AM stations need to have metadata just like the other stations do. So I have a case study. I tell people, I don't like telling them this, but I tell people I used to be a real engineer, right? I used to build things and do things, and my only really connection to real engineering anymore comes through this test bed that we have at NAB. Which is 3 AM and 3 FM transmitters, so we can do adjacent channel and co-channel interference testing. That was the original function of the test bed. But in 2022, we added metadata capability because, well, shoot, we're talking about it. We need to put our money where our mouth is, right? We're telling all these broadcasters they should do this. We need to do it too. So we worked with some partners. Zeta, RCS's playout system, and Xperi has a metadata management software called Rapid. They gave us free licenses for their products so we could put them in our test bed and show them to people and experiment with them. Here's just a close-up picture of the test bed in case you're interested. And the other thing, added the metadata stuff, we took out our old audio distribution system and we put in a Wheatstone Blade system. So now all the audio is routed digitally through everything in the rack. It's great. But what we did, we installed Zeta. We actually have three programs in the Zeta. And we installed Rapid. We send the output of those three programs to Rapid over the internet, comes back, and this is the kind of thing that we get back, and I believe this is the list of the songs that have just played or getting ready to play. And you can see there, what Rapid does is it takes the metadata that we've sent it from Zeta and cleans it up, identifies artwork that they can send back to us, and then sends back to the rack ready to go RDS and HD radio metadata. So it takes care of all of it. And then we have in the receive rack, I actually had to buy a bunch of new receivers so we could see how the metadata looked. And this is just an example showing that, it's working. So, and of course, every receiver's a little bit different. So that's, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And I would imagine that it's not difficulty that prevents people from doing it as much as it is cost and resources. And I understand that. I'm sure everybody has challenges like that. But, your audio is always going out, right? When you're a radio station, you're always transmitting audio. And today, you should also always be transmitting metadata. So we've done it, and if you're ever in the DC area, I would encourage you to give me a call, and I'd love to show this off to you, and we could talk about it, and maybe you'd enjoy seeing that. I don't know. I mentioned this back in 2017. We developed this best practices document. It was updated in 2021. We're actually on the verge of publishing a new update. And we're hoping that will be up in the next 2 weeks, and we'll discuss it at the show in New York. So I would suggest that you look at that, if this is a topic you're not familiar with. And there's information in this best practice, not just for engineers, but also for program people, for station management people, helping them understand the importance of the metadata and how it all works. But of course, the biggest section is actually about for the engineers, showing how you put things together. Here's a diagram, I think this next slide here. This is a diagram out of that best practices. And this is essentially what we did to our radio testbed. That's a resource for everybody. Hybrid radio services, I've already mentioned them a couple times. I've mentioned DTS AutoStage. I would like to ask a question of this group. Are any of you taking advantage or looking at the analytics that AutoStage can provide to your station? Is anybody doing that? Because that's something that I don't have a slide illustrating the kinds of analytic information that the AutoStage system provides broadcasters, but it's pretty amazing. You could imagine a map of your listening area that's color-coded showing you where people are listening to your station. Anybody who's listening to your station using one of these new receivers is going to contribute to that heat map, they call it, which shows where the listeners are. And they provide that. They provide information on when people are listening. It's all anonymized, so there aren't any privacy issues with that. But this is information that you get for free if you participate in the AutoStage system. And what that means is you sign up with Xperi, and you provide you send your metadata to the Xperi system using an API that they provide. So if you do that, then you will get the analytic information that they're generating from their system. And it's significant. And I don't know how to get you to try that, but you should really, I know if I was a broadcaster, I would really want to do that. No reason not to. These are the brands that currently have hybrid radio technology in their vehicles. I'm told that before the end of the year, a number of other brands are going to announce that they're supporting hybrid services. And the way that works is these auto folks, they don't announce it until it's like coming off of the production line. So, and I don't know which car makers they're going to announce it for, but once they've made that announcement, I think we'll start seeing these hybrid radio implementations immediately. So DTS AutoStage, again, you got to reach out to these folks. If you're a radio station and you haven't done that, then you're missing out on quite a bit. You're missing out on great presentation in these hybrid radio vehicles for your product, and you're missing out on the analytics. So this is how you can get in touch with them. There's a technical standard setting group in Europe called Radio DNS, which also supports hybrid radio services, and they have a lookup service where and Audi is the best example of this, perhaps. The way the Audi, any system that's using Radio DNS will reach out to the Radio DNS server, and then the Radio DNS server will tell the vehicle where it can find the internet content associated with this station. So, for example, if you want to provide a streaming URL so that the receiver will blend from the over-the-air signal to the audio stream if you should drive out of the area or if you should go someplace where there's a lot of interference. This Radio DNS service will support that. Now, I've actually got a utility where I can inspect the Radio DNS database to see which U.S. broadcasters are using it. And I first, in 2021 when I visited, I showed you this slide, except I had the number of stations wrong. I hope hopefully you've forgotten about that. Of course, I just reminded you. But this was, back then, in 2021, I believe 6% of stations were doing it. I did it again in 2022, and I just ran it in 2023 before I came out to this meeting. And I was encouraged to see the numbers almost double from what it was in 2021. So that's certainly a positive development. These are the only broadcasters, though, that are making use of it. So if you're a Wisconsin broadcaster and your name isn't on that list, then you should think about getting on that list. Again, this is not something that people have to pay for. This is a service that's provided for free to broadcasters. So, and it'll make a difference in how your station looks in whichever vehicle is using that system, right? If Radio DNS in the U.S., it's Audi and BMW, and although I didn't see much evidence of it in that BMW I was looking at in the parking lot. Again, these are the two easiest things a broadcaster can do to try and jump onto that hybrid radio bandwagon, I'll call it. So what are the consequences of not doing this? Well, I've listed them here. I think the one that jumps out to me the most is these station lists that I'm seeing in these cars. This isn't something we used to have, right? When 10 years ago, when we didn't have the big displays, we didn't have station lists. People relied on their presets. or they relied on knowing, you know, which station they wanted to listen to. Now there's these station lists, and I say sad-looking station lists because I think, you know, that's a little strong perhaps, but it really is. I mean, I think that radio broadcasters can do better than that. Lost revenue isn't a big one. I don't know how much money's to be made there, but I expect that, you know, that source of revenue is going to be increasing, right? I mean, isn't that generally the case, is that companies are increasing their digital revenues generally? And I expect the same is going to be true with this metadata. And some vehicles, this is a tough one to talk about, because automakers have realized that they can't rely on broadcasters to fully provide metadata. And that what I just showed you there, those lists and things, is evidence of that. And consequently, they've taken matters into their own hands. They've started to include, and when I say started, I mean years ago, on-vehicle databases that are powered by this company called Gracenote, which is a subsidiary of Nielsen, so that your car radio can do a audio recognition on a song and pull the album art out of this on-vehicle database. Or if they don't have it, they can download it. So, and that's a pretty good thing, actually. I mean, it makes radio look really good. So, and broadcasters don't have to do anything. They just keep sending out their audio program and voila. But if a broadcaster is using that metadata, for example, to try and generate revenue, then it gets defeated when it's received in a system like that. So it's just a real mess. And we complain about that to the, NAB is in conversation with automakers, and we explain to them, broadcaster metadata has to take priority. It's the broadcaster's signal, it's a broadcaster's program, and we believe that a car should not step on that, but they are. And that's just going to be something that we continue to work with them on. It'd be a lot easier to convince them not to do that or to prioritize the broadcaster metadata if there was more of it. So, because they know. First time we visited General Motors and we were talking about hybrid radio, some guy in the room was like, well, you don't even do RDS. What do you mean? I mean, you get your broadcasters to do a good job with RDS, and then we'll believe that you want to do these other things too. So there's some amount of skepticism within the industry, the auto industry, about what broadcasters can do here. So we need to, step up. Here, I'm showing the Ionic display again, and as I mentioned, you see there's a station list there on the left, and you look at that, each station has a logo and it has some information. WTOP radio, it's truncated because of the length of the display, but if I were to scroll through that list, what you would see is every station has a logo. Every station has information on it. It looks great. So I'm going to just stop for a second to see if anybody has any questions about this metadata stuff. And I see a man here with his hand up, and he's holding the microphone, so how convenient.
Orange. No, thank you. I have a question about Gracenote. Who regulates it? Who supervises it? Because, for an example, I have it in my vehicles, and when I'm driving, and don't tell anybody I do this, but while I'm driving, and if I see the wrong cover art, wrong artist picture, I take a picture of it. So, for example, everybody knows Dr. John, right place, wrong time. The picture of Dr. Dre came up. I would like to say that's incorrect. I think that's easy. And I don't know what their logarithm is, because it seems like another example is Steve Marriott from Humble Pie. When he has a solo song out, Steve Martin comes on. So it's like it reads six or seven characters in and makes a decision.
Yeah.
Is there any way of fixing that? Because in my personal opinion, it makes me, the radio guy, look stupid. I'm the guy putting that information out and to the public.
Sure, because consumers don't realize this, I think, by and large. They don't realize that this information that they're seeing isn't coming from the broadcasters. That's a very good point. But the answer to your question, I think, is Grace Note and the car maker. You know, and it's not something I have engaged with Grace Note about. But that's very helpful to hear that, because in fact, we're going to have a meeting with Grace Note next week. So that's something that I have never asked that question, and I can find out. But and I'm sure what they're going to say is you got to talk to the automakers.
No, it's them. Because I see the same thing with SiriusXM when there's artists on there. It does exactly the same thing. And I remember in the good old days when this all first started, seeing like a Rolling Stones song come up, you know, just regular Satisfaction, and they put the wrong album up. And I thought, okay, are they pushing to sell the greatest hits version of it, or are they pushing the original album version, or are they pushing the live version of it? And was that something that was originally controlled by Apple when iTunes was
on there? That's an issue, absolutely. But this is this gets back to what we've been telling the automakers, which is if the broadcaster's providing it, you should use it. And I drove around D.C. in an Audi that had this their system, and it had Grace Note in it, as well as the hybrid connection and everything. And I have a picture of Dave Colasar. Maybe some of you know Dave. He's at WWFD. Holding his phone, which shows what album art they're sending over the signal, and then holding it right next to my receiver, and it's different, you know. So, and we've told Audi, and they said that they made a change to the settings to address our issue, but I'm not sure. I haven't gone back and tested it. So, I have a gentleman here with his hand up, and a gentleman over there. So let's take this. Do you have a microphone?
Yeah.
Let's go with you, and while this guy's getting his microphone. Shane. Hi, Shane.
Hi, David. So one thing I've observed with the Audis, and I've had a chance to drive several on rentals recently, and there's a setting in there that enables and disables their connected car feature, right?
Yeah.
If it's enabled by default, apparently, and if it's enabled and that car is not subscribed to the service, you get no metadata at all.
So not even the broadcaster metadata?
Not even broadcast-provided metadata. And as for the album art image and Grace Note and so on, we've observed that quite a bit, too. We've had listeners who have complained about it. The only way we've found around that, unfortunately, and is HD radio artist experience.
Yeah.
Because at least in theory, if you're sending that data over HD radio and artist experience, it should override what the vehicle is trying to do or what the service is trying to do. Now, with the Audi, I think if you have that connected feature turned on, it may or may not, and I'm not sure some of the others may be the same way, but that's been our best shot so far at fixing
that. Yeah, the settings. The settings in the Audi were very confusing, and I'm not even sure they worked. You know, I disabled the Grace Note, but I was still getting, you know, album art on an AM station that couldn't possibly be sending it. So, but that's true. Okay, we have a question here.
Yes, I think it's kind of related to the industry anyway. RGM got a brand new Ford Escape, I think it was 22 model. Operations manager, they both got into the brand new car, trying to get to radio, pushed through a whole bunch of menus, even hit the music button, and it took them 20 minutes to get to radio, actual terrestrial radio. Mm. And they had an old blank moment there, like what's gonna happen to our industry if this is the way the car dashes are going?
Yeah.
And so this was Ford. And of course they're texting me like, there's something I can do about it. I'm like, I'm not in control of this stuff.
Yeah.
But I guess the question is, what can we do as individual broadcasters, and what can we do as an industry to get the automakers to make it where radio is a little more prevalent?
Well, regarding the second question, I think what can we do as an industry? NAB is trying to take the lead on that. You know, we've reached out to car makers. We have an auto initiative committee that you know, helps us chart our path. I think we've made some good progress in meeting people and understanding how these systems work and having an opportunity to complain about that sort of thing. But ultimately, it's up to them. I mean, the automakers, and they buy radios like Gracenote, for example, is what you would call a tier one provider to car makers. Because car makers don't develop their own in-vehicle database systems. They go to Gracenote and they buy one. But Gracenote creates this wonderful system, and they encourage the automaker to do the right thing and let the broadcaster data come through if it's there. But then it's up to the automaker to decide whether they want to do that or not.
But how do we get the menus to be easier for listeners to find us? That was the big concern.
Well, you know, we looked into that issue four or five years ago. It was one of the first things we looked at. We hired a survey company to take people into new cars and see if they could figure out how to use radio and stuff, because that was the kind of story that we were hearing. And the results of our study showed that it wasn't as big of a problem as we thought. And I'm curious about the Ford example, because of my son-in-law just got a new Ford vehicle, and anybody I know gets a new car, I'm there, you know, with my camera and my computer to play with the radio. And it worked fine. I didn't have any trouble with it. I was more concerned about my brother just bought a new GMC pickup, and pretty top of the line vehicle, doesn't have HD radio. And GM cars, it's like they've stopped putting HD radio in. You may have read that GM is going to stop providing access to CarPlay and Android Auto in their new electric vehicles. And it's because GM, they want to be the infotainment provider for their listeners. And they want to charge for it too, by the way. So, you know, I don't know what to do about your friend who can't work the radio except, you know, help them. You know, we're working with the car makers. Another thing we thought of early on, which hasn't really panned out so well, is radio broadcasters often have relationships with automakers, right? Because the car dealers are big advertisers. So we thought maybe there's a connection there that we can take advantage of. But again, that's just not something that's really panned out. And it's discouraging to see how little the dealers know about infotainment. So, next question. Thanks for all these questions, by the way.
Yeah, a couple of things I wanted to mention. Sometimes with new cars, you actually have to enable the HD radio. My mother has a 2018, and actually when it does like firmware updates, sometimes it turns the HD radio off, because I'll look at the display and I'll be like, well, this doesn't look like it did before. And so I think, you know, sometimes that's it. You know, is that a firmware turns it off, or depending on the manufacturer, you got to go in and turn it on, or turn it on for the multicast channels I've seen, or it's broken down into the AM and FM, have to be turned on individually. So it really depends on the manufacturer and the radio and that. And then as far as, you know, navigating through the menus, I've also seen folks, not being able to use it because they're so reliant on using their phone for their in-car entertainment. I was in Boston with my girlfriend last week, and I wanted to listen to the traffic updates. And I had trouble figuring out the phone, and I'm like, well, how do you change the station? She goes, well, I don't use that. I just plug my phone in and, you know, listen to Pandora. And it was like, oh, okay. So
it's true. I mean, these are all reasons why it's important for broadcasting to do its best and look as good as it can because of these things, and which are just only going to get worse, right? I mean, it's only going to become like those cars I was showing you with the bigger screens, and you've probably seen pictures of these really nice, expensive cars, like the whole front of the car is a screen, you know? So it's tough. It's tough, yes.
So this also bounces back to, like, mid-age vehicles. Like, my girlfriend's car is too old. There's no hope there in that regard. But, like, I just bought a 2019 with very low mileage and everything, and it's got a display screen. It's got interface to Android Auto. It happens to be Nissan. But what about, like, Nissan is not on the list of the manufacturers right now offering DTS. Will it be one of the ones who might be? Would it push it as a firmware update that, assuming his other issues don't suddenly create three other problems, it becomes available when they decide to push that update in 1 month, 3 months, whatever?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you should bring that up because the Hyundai that I've been showing you screenshots of, when I bought that car, it did not have the DTS auto stage. And it was an update. I went and it was a consumer installed update. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw that. And I actually did this update and right around the time that it was announced. So, and this was a 2023 vehicle, 2019, and Hyundai pushed this update across many year cycle, in many years of many model years. And it was only the newest ones that got the hybrid feature set. So a 2019 Nissan, they might put something out, but it's my guess is it's probably a little bit too old to take advantage of that the latest technology. But you know, and then on the other hand, my wife has an Audi Q5, and we wanted to update the Audi software. It costs $500. So needless to say, that old software is working just fine. Question.
I drive a 2017 Toyota RDS pad, all works great. When I have to take it in and sometimes get a loaner, which is like, say, a 2020 or a 2021 from Toyota, when I put the vehicle in drive, pad and RDS disappear. They take it off as a safety feature, yet you can still look at the map.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And there's been some stuff, you know, if you Google it, I thought, you know, is it a software update or anything? No, it's purposely.
I've never heard about that. I'm surprised, too, because we work a lot with a guy at iHeart named Alan Jurison. Maybe some of you know Alan. He does a lot of, like, field research onto receivers, and Toyota is one of the main ones that he focuses on, and I had not heard about that. So I'm going to have to reach out to Alan and see if he's seen that as well.
Yeah, it was some of the newer ones, and I, you know, as a consumer and what I do for a living, I wouldn't buy the vehicle because it wouldn't work for my purpose, because my purpose is to, when I'm driving in, and I live in Chicago, I got plenty of time to do my research while I'm driving. I can check out everybody's pad, everybody's RDS.
You know, and I think there's a theme here, and the theme is car radios are really complicated and diverse. You know, they're not. It's not gone are the days when you had two knobs and five push buttons, and it was the same in nearly every car, except maybe one car turns it vertical, you know, and one car has it horizontal. And there's no stopping this, but what can we do? I think when I say we, kind of the royal we broadcasters, what can broadcasters do? They can make their product look as good as it can. That's one part of it. One part of it is the industry outreach, and that's the part that NAB is involved in. And it's just, times they are changing. But it's really also, you know, the flip side, great opportunities. I mean, you have a better looking product than you ever have. And just need to capitalize on that. So I'm assuming I can still go until 12:30. Is that correct? So I've got a few more. I'm not going to have time to get through all of this, but let me show you some more slides of car displays. little advertising here for our panel tomorrow morning. We're going to talk about AM. Last fall, I went to the LA Auto Show, and my main goal in attending was to look at electric vehicles and see whether they had AM in them or not. And long story short, there were 25 models that I could go in and play with the radio, and out of those 25 models, 19 of them had AM. So AM in electric vehicle is an issue, but it's not a monumental issue. It's not an issue that, like, every automaker isn't using it. In fact, more are than aren't. And these numbers are a little biased because Mercedes, BMW, Audi, automakers were not at this show. And if they had been, their cars would have been EVs without AM, so the number would have been lower. But taking those German manufacturers out of the mix, that's what I found. So let me show you. This is just a graph showing that, you know, it is an issue, but it's not an issue that's, it's not taken over the industry as far as keeping AM out. And of course, there's been a lot happening in the last 6 months, right? Because there's now legislation pending before Congress to mandate AM radios in cars. So, and we'll be talking about that at our panel tomorrow. I saw some more displays when I was at the show, and you know, it's just, they're just so nice, and they've got so many features, but they're all different too. And this is what we've been talking about, is how different they are. I saw some evidence of hybrid features in some Toyota vehicles. The Lexus and this Toyota BZ4X is their first all-electric car, and I think it's actually being sold now. they have some hybrid features in their radios, but they haven't made any announcements about them, and I haven't learned yet what's powering this hybrid technology. There's also, we mentioned Android Auto, right? That's the projection technology that takes your phone and puts it on the dash. Android Automotive is an operating system for cars that's becoming very popular. And we're just starting my brother's GMC pickup. I'm pretty sure it has Android Automotive as the operating system, because you see a lot of Google features. Like, there's, you know, Google Maps is built right into the dash there. What we discovered a year ago was the feature set for radio in Android Automotive was just horrible. They had no feature set to accept RDS information or HD radio or any of that. So NAB actually, going on about 2 years ago now, we formed a consortium of international broadcasters and Xperia and us, and we are changing this. And the Android Automotive software has been improved. So these kind of sad-looking receiver displays that you see here should be getting a lot better in future versions that use Android Automotive. But this was good evidence of how important this work we were doing was, because they just look terrible. I also saw some, you know, gas-powered vehicles, just to show examples of the displays. We've all seen that now already. So it's only going to get worse too. I mean, they're just going to keep changing them and making them more different from each other, I bet. So last couple minutes here, just a real quick thing about our test bed. Here's a picture of the test bed in the lab. We have a big technology lab now where we're doing television and radio work. That's my boss, Sam Matheny, there standing up front with a group, taking a tour group through the lab. These are some of the things that we've been working on. We bought an RF channel simulator because that's something very useful to have in a lab like this. John Keane's name already came up once today. We've actually hired John Keane to install it for us. So we're working on that. We're also, there's this high power, this FM digital power increase proceeding right now at the FCC, which maybe you've been reading about, or maybe you even filed comments in the proceeding. The aeronautical industry has raised some concerns about interference to an aeronautical band that's just adjacent to the high end of the FM band. And to support our work with them, we were able to run into the lab and create a bunch of different spectra to show them, because we don't believe they're using the proper test signal. So we're able to go into our lab and show them what their test signal should look like. In fact, we're actually in the process of generating a test signal, which we're going to provide to them. So that's the kind of thing we can support in the lab. Again, this is the digital power increase. Reply comments were just due last Friday in that proceeding, so hopefully we'll be seeing some action soon. It's likely that the stations on 107.9 may have some extra hurdles to jump through before they increase power, because they're the ones that are most likely to interfere with the aeronautical services. So I'm just going to punch through these because I'm really out of time. I just kind of gave a shout out to my colleague Bob Weller, and he studies all, he keeps track of all these spectrum and regulatory issues. And if you all have concerns about spectrum and regulatory issues, I hope you'll reach out to NAB either directly or through someone at the Wisconsin Association, because we really spend a lot of time doing that sort of thing. Drone remote ID type stuff, stuff you may already know about anyway. And lastly here, I just wanted to point out that we have subcommittee meetings of the National Radio Systems Committee at the New York show in 2 weeks, and we're going to be publishing two new documents, AM Carrier Synchronization Guideline and Metadata for Streaming Handbook, and we're updating a third. So keep an eye out for that. I think some of these guidelines will be good resources for you all. And that's it. So thanks a lot. Thanks again for having me back, and I'll be here. I'm not going to be here all week, but I'll be here all day and tomorrow too. So please come up and we can continue the chat. So again, thanks.